Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Monday morning health briefs now. With us today, emergency medicine physician for Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital, Dr. Jeffrey Bomer. Doctor, good morning. Let's talk first about the measles. A lot of people getting more and more concerned about this. Who needs to get a shot? And what's the deal on the measles booster?
Yeah, so, you know, measles booster is extremely effective. So if you've gotten your shot, so anyone that's gotten their shots from 1990 on, you're good. Those are extremely effective, 97% effective. So I think those that are they're maybe at risk were those that got a shot before 1968. So those were, you know, maybe not as effective. And so if you any concern there, you probably should get a booster, especially if you're, you know, going to be around folks that are have compromised immune systems, or if you're traveling internationally or going to one of these areas where there's an outbreak, you certainly want to get it. But the other age group are those that got shots between 1968 and 1989. Those are also one shot. Those are really effective, about 93% effective. But I you know, having been in healthcare a long time, we've had to recurrently get our blood drawn to see, hey, do you still have immunity to measles? And it's interesting that there's a small percentage of people do lose those antibodies. So so some people that have that have gotten their shots between 1968 and 1989 may need to get that booster to get them up to that 97% the rest of the population as it got them after 1989. So other folks that are high risk, college students, so those that are living in close quarters with one another, healthcare workers, as I mentioned already, and then folks that have conditions that may put their their bodies at risk or put their immune systems at risk, HIV, then those that are obviously that are immunosuppressed on medications such as chemotherapy or transplant patients, they need to talk to their physicians about whether or not they should be getting a booster as well.
Yeah, we've been hearing a lot about cases, especially in Texas. Anything around here in our area?
No. I mean, I'd say I've been fortunate. I've been in emergency medicine for almost 25 years, Bob, and I've never seen a case of measles. Seen pictures, I've heard stories, but I've never seen it. I've been very fortunate to practice in an area that's very well vaccinated. So it really speaks to that herd immunity, right? So, I mean, if we get 90% of people vaccinated, you're probably not going to see that disease just because there's not enough people spreading it. The problem with measles is that it is super contagious. So I mean, one person can spread it to 90% of unvaccinated people around them. So, I mean, it is highly, highly contagious. And, folks that that are probably before the 60s. I mean, you heard about cases that were a lot of people had measles. There was everyone. It was sort of a rite of passage, right?
Yeah,
like the chicken pox used to be. And it's just that it's a testament to how good these vaccines are. And I've never seen it or heard of it. Nor have I run into a colleague that's seen it. And so we're lucky around here. We're well vaccinated. I hope that continues and that we continue to have that herd immunity. But it just goes to show if you have some weak link in that herd immunity and you decrease it, how prone we are to spreading a disease that I think people think of as not being a serious disease, but it can be deadly. It can be if you have a compromised immune system. If you're really young, it can the young and the old can really, really be susceptible to this and can die from it. So it's really important that we keep those vaccines up.
Yeah, I wasn't too concerned, and then I heard how contagious it is, and then you hear about various cases in other parts of the world, and then people traveling, so it could spread fairly quickly, easily. Let's hope not, right?
Very, very much so. It's spread by respiratory droplets, so it can, classic situation be on a plane, right? The international travel has made these types of massive spreaders, more likely. So yeah, it's if you're not vaccinated, it's you make yourself prone. And it also, even if you're a healthy person that's unvaccinated and you get it, you may be fine, but it's the other folks that you expose yourself to that may not do as well. And that's the concern and why it's such a health risk.
What's the latest on the flu? Are you still seeing cases on the rise?
Yeah, I think I would say in my practice at Central DuPage, it's been, I'd say, plateau. We're not seeing an increase, but it's not going away. We're seeing flu cases, you know, every day. And it seems like it's just lingering. It's just been around a while. And unfortunately, you know, getting back to vaccines, I mean, the flu shot this year was very effective. It was actually a good match. It's been criticized in the past of not being as great of a match, but this year it looks like it was a great match, particularly for influenza, most of the influenza A strains. I think we're starting to see a little bit of this influenza B. I've seen some cases pop up here and there, and there's been some discussion that we may still see a surge in influenza B. So just if you had the flu, unfortunately, earlier this year, it may not make you immune to getting influenza B, or you still may get another strain of influenza A. So I think it's just a testament to the fact that you got to get your flu shot to help prevent this disease. Most people, it's going to be, you know, you're going to feel sick for 5 to 7 days. You're going to feel run down, and it kind of wipes you out. But, you know, it's not a benign disease. I mean, we've already seen about 19,000 deaths, I think, in the United States this year, including 86 children. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's never too late to get your flu shot, Bob. So if you haven't gotten it, you know, it's still running out there. I think it's a good opportunity to go get your flu shot.
Yeah, good advice. With Northwestern Medicine's Dr. Jeffrey Bohmer, Doctor, fill us in on this ultrasound test, another way to have a prostate examined.
Yeah, so it's a good way to look at the prostate without having anything invasive done, right? So these are for patients that are having symptoms of what we call lower urinary tract symptoms. So that's going to be like urinary, you know, going to the bathroom a lot at nighttime, difficulty with the stream, weak stream. So, but it's a good way to non-invasively look at the prostate and say, hey, what's going on here? Is it, you know, benign prostatic hyperplasia known as BPH? Is it an inflammation of the prostate or known as prostatitis? Or could this be an early sign of prostate cancer? So it's a good way to do this without being invasive at all. So it's really just the patient has to lie down. They put some gel on the lower part of the abdomen. The patient has to have a full bladder. Gives the ultrasonographer a what we call a window to look at the prostate, and they can get a pretty good look at it. It's not as good as the dreaded transrectal ultrasound, which is as the name implies, means that you have to have the probe actually inserted into the rectum to get a better view of the prostate. But it can serve as a good screening tool to say, hey, this looks like this is a BPH, and you know we know what the next steps are, or it looks like there may be a tumor there. We maybe need to do a biopsy, and so it's a good way to sort of get that first look at it, and it's painless. It's there's no radiation. It's like I said, not invasive, and it gives a pretty good accurate measurement. So some patients may need to move on to next steps. Some of them may need that transrectal ultrasound. Some may need that MRI, which I know we've spoken about on another program. And I know that you know, some of them obviously may need to have a biopsy based on these results. So, but yeah, I mean, if there's a suspicion based on the history, based on the physical examination, the rectal exam, digital rectal exam performed on the annual visit, or if the PSA level is rising, those are indications to have this test done. And I think it kind of decreases that sort of anxiety or stress about having that prostate test done, because it is painless and non-invasive.
So is it replacing men's favorite test, doctor?
No.
It's not? Oh.
Not yet. No, not there yet. I am a believer, though, that, Bob, that, you know, we use the ultrasound more and more in medicine, and I think it's becoming almost the new stethoscope. But I wouldn't be surprised in the next 5 or 10 years, with technology advancing and the portability of ultrasounds, that it can be a really bedside tool to look at a lot of things. It already is. So we may be getting there, Bob, but unfortunately, nope, we're stuck getting our digital rectal exam at the annual visit.
All right. Let's talk about women and this study that analyzed data from about 33,000 women. And yeah, the findings really indicate maybe we all should be eating more oranges. What's the deal on this research?
Yeah. It's an interesting study. So They looked at, like I said, about 32,000 women, and they linked, they basically had these women eat an orange or the equivalent of an orange, some citrus fruit once a day, and they found that there was about a 20% reduction of depression. So, you know, the question is why, and I think it's they get into some of the weeds and explaining why this is the case. So there's this gut brain connection that we've spoken about on this program. I know that healthy gut means healthy brain, and so the theory is that the citrus has some of these flavonoids that promote the good bacteria in our guts, and these good bacteria can help reduce inflammation, and they also help support our body's production of what are called neurotransmitters. So those things that like serotonin, which is heavily linked to depression or heavily linked to mood regulation and obviously depression. So the theory is that by eating these citrus fruits, that it can help promote that good bacteria and help reduce, depression, and it looks like it has some effects on dementia as well. So I think it goes back to, we are what you eat. So, I think it's obviously there are other foods that, that can do the same thing. Yogurt, so fermented foods, kimchi, omega-3 rich foods, such as fatty fish, salmon, seeds, nuts, those kinds of things can have a similar effect. But, this is a simple thing. It's not a replacement for treatment for depression, but I think it's certainly something else that we can do, and it's another something else we can do, put in our armamentarium to say, hey, if we work on our diets and include these things in our diets, we may be promoting our mental health as well as our physical health.
Sounds good. Dr. Jeffrey Boomer, Northwestern Medicine. Keep us posted on those advances in ultrasound testing, doctor. You know what I mean?
I got you, Bob.
Have a good day. Thank you very much.
You too.